In the new book, Eye on the Struggle, biographer James McGrath Morris for the first time tells the complete story of the woman dubbed First Lady of the Black Press. The new book is Eye on the Struggle, Ethel Payne, the First Lady of the Black Press. It is a story inextricably linked to the dark history of segregation and the grassroots struggle to end it. In the 50s and 60s, the black press operated in a different parallel sphere from the white press. The latter generally portrayed civil rights legislation as a gift bestowed on African Americans, but Payne, writing for the Chicago Defender, one of the nation's premier black papers, saw through the rhetoric and reported on the failures of the legislation to grant her people the equal rights that were their due. The struggle for civil rights, however, is only part of Ethel Payne's story. The granddaughter of slaves and the daughter of a Pullman porter, Payne grew up in a thriving black community of a deeply segregated Chicago in the first half of the 20th century. The fifth child in a large family that placed a great emphasis on education, Ethel dreamed of being a novelist. Her father's death when she was 14 placed a great strain on family finances, which McGrath Morris says further affected as the Depression took hold.
She's raised by a mother without a husband, without an income during the Depression. But the mother did everything to keep her family together and refused to let the kids stop their education. She was a Latin teacher who believed that education was the key. And what was unique about Ethel Payne's upbringing in Southside Chicago, she was in a part of Southside Chicago in which she lived in a predominantly African-American neighborhood, almost universally black after the 1919 riot, but surrounded by white neighborhoods. So she ended up going to schools and using libraries that were intended for white Chicagoans. So she got a much better education than another kid growing up in a different part of Chicago. And that was an enormous influence on her life. And it also did something else. It permitted her to be, and I can't think of any better term, bicultural, in the sense that when she comes to Washington as one of three African-American reporters working in a lily-white press corps, dealing with white senators, many of whom wouldn't even speak to her, she was fully versed in how to work in both cultures, and that's not something to underestimate. She knew how to work in the white world.
She dreamed of being a novelist. Was that dream helpful in her being such an effective journalist?
I think any kind of writing is helpful. I think what was the most helpful for her was an understanding of her readership. You know, Ethel Payne's articles have not been collected in any kind of civil rights reader, whereas many other reporters' works now appear in these collections. And I think therein lies an interesting story. Ethel Payne's writing was very simple, very folksy, much like Ernie Pyle did in World War II. It was almost like a letter home. And that, I think, in many respects, was one of her writing geniuses that came from having written for her and fiction, having studied fiction, in that she really understood how to write for her audience, which you must remember, in 1950, prior to Brown v. Board decision of desegregated schools, there were very few African-Americans who could pursue education to its fullest. In other words, a lot of her readership struggled with the mere act of writing. So she reached them with her reports in a manner that worked for them. Now, as we look back 60 years later, her writing may seem simple, may seem folksy, but that in that is the genius of what she was doing.
It's also, there's a great frustration. I mean, you can feel the frustration in the writing.
Oh, yeah. No, it's bottled up. I mean, she's denied, like she's a metaphor or parallel for any woman at that time who's African-American. Every door that she wants to pursue is closed. When she becomes involved in the civil rights movement in 1940 under A. Philip Randolph and the original March on Washington, she's put off to type letters because that's what women did. And she had the nerve to stand up to this famous man and say, look, if that's what you want me to do, I'm not going to stick around. So he granted her a leadership post, but she never was ever given a door that opened for her. She had to open up every door along the way. And so when she came to Washington, you have to understand the courage of a black woman standing up in the White House press corps and asking a white president a challenging question about civil rights. The question you might ask when you read the book is, where'd she get the nerve? Well, her nerve came from being shunted at every instance of her life. So when she finally gets to have a seat at the table of power, she's not going to kowtow. She is going to bring to the president these important questions.
And what was the reaction from the press corps and from the president?
It was mixed. some of the press corps championed her and told her privately, you know, these are the questions we should have been asking. The president tolerated it for a while, and then at one point when she asked a very direct question about why he doesn't desegregate interstate bus travel with an executive order, which was within his power, he then stands up, gets really upset, and equates African-Americans to being a special interest. The press room goes dead quiet, and somebody quickly asks another question because it's a real faux pas to suggest that a portion of the population that's trying to get its equal rights is a special interest. And after that, he learned it was better not to let her ask too many questions. But that also coincided with the development of what was going on in the South. We had the Montgomery bus boycott beginning and desegregation of the University of Alabama. So Payne now being closed out of asking questions from the president wasn't really a problem because she hopped on the plane and went south to start reporting on the front lines and what was happening.
It's remarkable just to read the story of even for the defender to be able to send a reporter to where she went and even on trips to Indonesia. I mean, she was a traveling member of the press corps going throughout the world covering the story through her eyes.
Well, she believed that the civil rights struggle wasn't a unique struggle to the United States. She thought it was tied to a much larger struggle for self-determination and freedom around the world. So when she made civil rights her beat, if you permit me making that description, it didn't stop in Washington, it didn't stop in Montgomery. She ended up going to Africa at least 13 times. She interviewed Nelson Mandela when he came out of prison. She went to a remarkable conference in 1955 in Bandung, Indonesia, and many of my readers have said, I never knew of this conference. Well, it's again, it's legacy of not understanding. The drama of that conference was the first international gathering of nations in which the Soviet Union and the United States were not invited. These were, as they described themselves, nations of color, which represented the majority of the world, and they were going to meet on their own, and Ethel Payne was not going to miss out on that story.
When LBJ signed the Civil Rights Act, she was invited. Ethel Payne was invited to be one of the observers in the East Room and was presented with one of the signing pens.
Yeah, and so it's a really poignant moment because Johnson, who had suffered under her pen when he was in the Senate in the 1950s, and she would come up and say, why are you gutting this civil rights bill? This is before Johnson became the great civil rights leader. And she did the same with Kennedy, recognized her significance, both as having informed African Americans to the progress or lack of progress in Washington or in the South, as well as activating that population by providing that information. You know, one of the great powers of journalism is that just merely lighting the dark recesses of society can invoke and create change. So it's a really poignant moment in her life. She's now regarded in iconic fashion, referred to as the First Lady of the Black Press, but she's getting on in years. The black papers are beginning to suffer financially because the economic basis for them has disappeared. White newspapers now hiring minority reporters. And so twice in the 1960s, in 64 and 65, she's presented with pens that were used in signing these two seminal acts.
She did leave journalism for a while.
She did. She had I'd like to think of it as an exile. Probably like you, you know that once you get the stuff in your blood, it's very hard to leave. And she left from 58 to 67. She came back to become the first black reporter to cover Vietnam and went there and then spent another bunch of years writing. And then after she left the Defender, she spent her retirement years, or what one might call retirement, she had no money, self-syndicating her own column and being a little more of an activist once she was free of having a beat and being a traditional journalist. She also ended up being a CBS correspondent.
Right.
She was the first black woman on national news, sort of like that. And, you know, her commentary wasn't necessarily something that we might go back and be inspired by, but the act of being there was profound. I interviewed a guy named John Ray, who became a TV anchor in a number of major metropolitan markets, an African-American from the West, and he said when he turned on the TV and saw her on TV, he knew his career was possible. And that's the kind of inspiration she had. She also mentored young women and help them get jobs. And then when they got jobs, she would stop in and she'd always say to them, be quality, meaning that, you know, just because you got this job, you've got a high standard to uphold to allow others to get these jobs.
The name of the book is Eye on the Struggle, Ethel Payne, the First Lady of the Black Press. It is published by Amistad. James McGrath Morris, thank you very much for spending time with us. Best of luck with the book.
Thank you. It was an enormous pleasure to be on your show.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book is Eye on the Struggle, Ethel Payne, the First Lady of the Black Press. It's published by Amistad by James McGrath Morris. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.